sitting around.
I call this meeting of House Finance to order. It is approximately 1:32 p.m. on Tuesday, February 6th. And present today are Representative Ortiz, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Representative Thompson, Representative Guerra, and myself, Co-Chair Seaton. And just so everybody knows, today is Representative Guerra's birthday. He's in the back eating cake.
I got water for lunch.
At this meeting, we will have our first hearing on the three board extension bills, HB 273, bill that extends the Marijuana Control Board, HB 274, bill that extends the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners, and HB 275 that extends the termination date for the Board of Massage Therapists. All three bills are by Representative Quito, who has joined us, as well as we've just been joined by Representative Guttenberg, though the bills are not by him. Is there any bills, any business come before the committee before we start? Seeing none, would Representative Quito and his staff join us at the table and put yourself on the record, and we'll start with Bill 273. Representative Quito.
Morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to come before House Finance Committee. First bill you have before you this morning is House Bill 273. House Bill 273 just extends the Marijuana Control Board, and it extends the Marijuana Control Board for a six-year extension, short of the full eight-year extension, which is an indication that the board has been functioning in the public's interest, but that they are still in kind of a formative stage and will need to come back before the legislature before too long in order to be reviewed. And so we are at a three-year review right now, and that was acknowledgement of the initial establishment of the control board and opportunity for the legislature to review how that board is functioning. And we do have our legislative auditor to go through the audit in more detail, and I also have my staff with me. And I suppose I should start with, for the record, my name is Sam Quito, Representative, House District 33.
And would you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Quito. And I did want to note for members that Erica McConnell, the director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board, is online for questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for the sponsor or his staff at this point in time? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my biggest concern is boards are supposed to support themselves, and it sounds like they're mingling their funds with the alcohol board. First of all, is that true? And is there anything they could do to keep those two separate so we know whether or not enough money is coming in from the sale of marijuana to be able to take care of the board's needs?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we do have the department online as well as our legislative auditor. This is a unique situation where we do have two boards that are actually supported by the same staff, so they share those staff costs. I'm not exactly sure how those costs are distributed. The general fund identified for the Marijuana Control Board was the initial funding that was identified in order to help that transition into establishing the board. There is approximately, I think, $500,000 that will be appropriated this year, and then next year that will be expected that the board will be fully sustainable based on its fees.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson, follow up.
And it was my understanding that that money would be paid back in the fees as well, so I don't know whether or not that has been adjusted to account for that.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's not something I'm aware of, or perhaps the department or our auditor could comment on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there further questions? And I want to recognize that Representative Pruitt has joined us. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you. And I think this is probably for the department or the board, because I wanted to follow up. I think what she's highlighted, we had a presentation earlier that said that I think they're only 70% currently covered by fees. But we've also recently read that there is a request that we decrease the amount, I think, of the tax. And my question is that if they're are you going to be able to make your initial deadline, which is 2020, to be able to fully fund through receipts, whether it's taxes, whether it's fees? And then secondarily, how would we accept, how can we get there if you're requesting that we lower the amount of funding that comes in if you're already struggling to be able to make it at this point in time?
And Representative Keto.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Pruitt. And I think what you're talking about really are two distinct issues. And so there is an issue of whether or not a business applies for a license and goes through the process. Those applications are what the Marijuana Control Board actually institutes, and their responsibility is to make sure that their application process is fully sustainable. That situation is different than the marijuana tax, which is the $50 per ounce, which is assessed as a tax and does go into the general fund. The fees that are assessed for the businesses as they're operating goes in as designated general funds so that the board has the ability to utilize those fees to balance its budget. They have no access to the tax money that's collected from marijuana.
And Representative Pruitt, would you like Ms. McConnell, the executive director of the board, to answer the question, or do you want to?
I think, as what he said is sufficient. I do have a follow up, but if she feels that she's better to follow up, or he can answer the follow up. Either way, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that clarification, and I will take you at what you said. So I guess the question, and this again, this may be for the board, is are they confident that they'll be on track, that they'll be able to fully fund themselves by the 2020 deadline?
And through the chair, Representative Pruitt, that is my understanding, but I would actually defer to the board to answer that question more accurately.
And Ms. McConnell, are you on there? Would you identify yourself for the record, and did you hear the question?
Mr. Chair, this is Erica McConnell. I am the director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. And through the chair, Representative Pruitt, yes, we do believe that by FY 2020, we will that we'll have enough licenses and the industry will have stabilized enough for us to be able to fully fund ourselves off of license and application fees.
Thank you. Is there a follow-up, Representative Pruitt?
There is one more follow-up, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time. So based on the 2020 being able to make that that deadline of being able to pay, do you suspect that you will, after a period of time, lower the licensing fees, or will they maintain, or will you maintain them at this level for a period of time? And what is your expectation of how you would handle that that excess that potentially could come from more revenue coming in over time?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, it's hard to say today whether the license fees will need to be raised or lowered, but the board is responsible for ensuring that the program is fully funded through the fees, and so that'll be something that the board will be evaluating, presumably on a yearly basis, to ensure that we aren't collecting more money than we need, but that we are also collecting as much money as we do need to fund our work.
Reverend Pruitt, one follow-up?
I do have one more. And sorry, Mr. Chair, as the former chair of the Commerce Subcommittee, when this was going through, there's a lot of questions that come from my time there, so I appreciate this. One last question. Did you guys start off with, I know we had a lot of conversation when the board was being formed, about the initial upfront cost to the state, the $1.5 million of setting it up. There was an expectation at the time that we put general fund into it. I can't recall if we did finally put intent language in the budget saying that we expected that to be essentially paid back by fees. I think we did. That being said, did you start off with an initial $1.5 million worth of money that needed to be paid back through fees? And does that still remain? Is that still something that you need to pay back if that was something you started off with?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, as I wasn't the director at the time, I would have to go back and review that and get back to you.
Thank you. And then Representative Gettberg and then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this is deals with the audit, so we can get into that. But I'll ask a question of the Ms. McConnell. Looking at some of the recommendations from the audit, I think you are unique in the state where you have one board controlling two industries. Some of the recommendations look like deal with conflicting priorities. Is there a discussion going on, or have you been part of it somewhere down the road where there would be both the ABC and the Marijuana Control Board would be standalone? Is one board capable of addressing both both board? Is that an issue going on?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, we have two boards right now. We have the alcohol board and the marijuana board. So are you are you asking whether those boards should be combined into one board in the future?
No, to be have separate staff, you know, because it used to be the ABC stood alone, and now you have the Marijuana Control Board, and in some ways the staffs are intermingled. From what I understand, is there a conflict of priorities?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. That's really a policy call for the legislature. I mean, we have staff that works very hard, and we manage to meet our priorities for both alcohol and marijuana. Some of those priorities would, of course, include licensing and getting license applications to the boards in the time required in our statutes and regulations, making sure that each new license has an inspection before they begin to operate, and investigating any complaints or violations that we find. So we feel that things are operating well, but should the legislature decide to split us up, that's your policy call.
I can follow through,
Mr. Chairman. Follow up, Representative Guttenberg.
So going through the recommendations, a lot of it is about timing and about follow-up and investigations in a timely manner. Is the question that you're understaffed, or that you, I mean, you're relatively new and you're, the industry is very new. So is it an issue that I know the income from the industry is expected to rise considerably, but are the recommendations from the audit seem to enforce that you need either to prioritize your staff time, which is in conflict because it's the same staff time with the ABC, and do you need more staff on the Marijuana Control Board side?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, certainly the recommendation about creating a prioritization plan for enforcement was something that the auditors found for both the Marijuana Control Board and the Alcohol Beverage Control Board through both of those audits. We have 8 enforcement staff, and as everybody knows, we have a very large state. But we recognize that this is what we have to work with, and everybody is working diligently to address issues particularly related to health and safety. And we agree with the auditor's conclusions that we should definitely have a written plan so that both the public and the licensees and the board all agree on what our priorities should be.
Another question, Mr. Chair? Separate question.
Let's come back to
it. Okay.
I wanted to recognize that Representative Grant had joined us some time ago. And Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr.
And then
Chairman.
Thompson and then Guerra.
I just want to put it on the record on page 8. It says, is the intent of the legislature that application and licensing fees cover the cost of regulation and recover unrestricted general fund appropriations made while the program was being established? So my question is, as you're looking at the fees for this next year, did you take that into account?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, was that Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Yes, that was. Go
thank
ahead.
You. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we are not at this time reviewing our fees, and I would have to get back to you more on a plan to reimburse for the initial costs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keto.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think one of the things that we as a legislature have to be attentive to is the board receives authorization to spend money from the legislature, and if they are spending money to put money back into the general fund, then we may actually need to have additional legislative authorization for them to do that, because right now statute identifies that the board will be self-sufficient. So when they do their fee review, they are looking at the expenses of the board and not past costs. So that might need to be something that the legislature does as a legislative change to allow them to do that. I don't know that they can put money back into the general fund under their statutes currently, but that's something that might need to be looked at.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, it's a cost. It should be on their books, so it should be a repayment like you would anything else, but I'd appreciate to see if we need anything else added, because I think it was everybody's intent when it was passed that the state would be held, you know, that we would not be the ones using general funds to do this, that they would be able to support themselves. But thank you.
Okay. Representative Thompson, then Guerra, and then Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I think you might have already answered my question. I know that on a lot of other boards, barbers and hairdressers, you know, all of them, accountants, CPAs, they don't have an investigative part of their board. I heard you say you have a staff of 8 investigators, I believe. Is that correct?
To the chair, Representative Thompson, yes, we do have a staff of 8 investigators.
Representative Thompson.
So as a follow-up then, you won't have any extra fees because the other places don't have investigators. They get assigned an investigator, and those fees get added to whatever their new rates are going to be when they have to do their licensing. So I think you've answered my question by having your own on-staff investigators that are already paid for.
Reverend Garrett.
Thanks, Chair. Probably for Ms. McConnell, when the initiative was passed, and I think since it was passed, it has to be honored, but one of the points made by the proponents was, I can't remember whether they said it was going to generate $4 or $7 million a year in tax revenue for the state, and I know I've generally, well, actually, for starters, can you let me know, do you know what the industry has generated in terms of tax revenue?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, yes, I do. Hang on just one second. Through the end of December, taxes collected to date are $6,314,773.
Thank you. That's for this calendar year or last calendar year?
That is since inception. Taxes were first paid in October of 2016. So that goes from October of 2016 through December of 2017.
And then through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, the initiative was passed. I feel like it should be honored the way it was written. Do you have any concern or whether the board has been too strict in allowing licenses? I guess that's the question.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I don't think the board has been too strict. They have only denied a handful of licenses. And have definitely approved the vast majority, probably in the 95% to 97% of license applications that have come before them.
And
Representative
Guerra, yeah, Mr. Chair. I have a concern about one of the rulings, but I guess it's not proper for here, so I'm not going to do that.
Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. McConnell, there was a comment earlier, so I want to expand on it a little bit. I know the industry is working on a plan to change the tax structure. Have they approached the board with that? It doesn't lower the taxes. It just changes the structure of it and who pays where. Have they put that in front of the board?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, at the last meeting of the board, which was just 2 weeks ago, the board did agree and vote to draft a resolution that suggests changing the tax structure from an excise tax to a percentage-based sales tax. That resolution will be drafted and brought back to the board for another vote at their April meeting, and should that resolution be adopted, it will be forwarded to the legislature.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, and is there a change? What is the revenue impact? Is it different than what it currently is?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, the board to date has not discussed what percentage, I mean, should this change be adopted, what the percentage should be. The concern is that having a flat tax artificially keeps the wholesale price high. Right now, the wholesale price is $800 a pound, whereas we have seen in other states that have had a supply glut that they wholesale marijuana is selling for $100 or $200 a pound, whereas here artificially it's kept at over $800 a pound because that's the taxes. So I don't think the issue for the board is about what the tax should be. It's about changing the method so that the price of marijuana can naturally fluctuate with supply and demand.
Thank you.
Are there further questions for the sponsor or for the director? Seeing none, thank you very much. And let's ask the auditor to come forward. Sir, could you put yourself on the record and begin with your presentation?
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. And you should have a copy. I see most of you are flipping through the report. And just as a reminder, the purpose of a sunset audit is to determine whether a board or commission is serving the public's interest and whether it should be extended. So as this is a new board, this is its first sunset. We do have some information beginning on page 3 of the background information section that talks about creation of the board and takes you through that process. Report conclusions begin on page 5. Overall, we did find that this board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing marijuana establishments and developing and adopting regulations. We are recommending a 6-year extension. The audit is fairly positive overall. We did find the board met its statutory mandate to establish regulations by November 2015. And the most significant regulations include requirements for the issuance, renewal, suspension, and revocation of registrations to operate marijuana establishments. They set qualifications for registration, and they set a schedule of fees. To help evaluate the effectiveness of this board, we decided to send out a survey to licensees and then a survey to local governments. We sent it to 101 licensees, and we had a 70% response rate. We sent it to 16 local governments and had an 88% response rate. The survey questions and the answers are included in appendices B and C of your audit report. 100% of local government survey respondents and 75% of the licensee survey respondents rated the board's overall effectiveness at serving the public's interest at effective or very effective. Additionally, 93% of the local government survey respondents rated the board's effectiveness in enforcing marijuana laws in their area as good or excellent. On page 8, on Exhibit 2 on page 8 shows the board issued 122 licenses from July 2016 through April of 2017, which is when we began our audit. 80% of the licensee survey respondents rated their overall licensing experience as good or excellent. On page 8, we explain that the FY17 operating budget did include intent language that the application and licensing fees should cover the cost of regulation and recover the unrestricted general funds that were spent to establish the program. So when we were in there, we knew it was early on, but we wanted to make sure that there were a process in place to track the revenues and expenditures. And what we found is that the AMPCO office, they have established the accounting structures to track revenues and expenditures for the board. They did explain at that time that it was too early in the process to determine whether the levels, the fee levels, were sufficient to cover the cost, but they did expect to be fully funded by FY20. Exhibit 3 on page 9 does include the schedule of licensing fees. We did have four recommendations. They begin on page 11. The first is for the board, the director, and the Marijuana Control Office Enforcement Supervisor to develop an enforcement plan, and we do have the same recommendation for the Alcoholic Beverage Board. There is limited resources, enforcement resources within the office. They do serve two different boards, and there is no plan right now to help them prioritize their limited resources. The director of the board, they didn't really consider the need or the importance of it. It just hadn't surfaced. And by not formally establishing a plan, the section does run the risk of not adequately protecting the public with their limited resources. Recommendation number 2 is for the board and the AMPCO director to implement a process to monitor and track all complaints. And again, this is a recommendation for the Alcoholic Beverage Board as well. They do have a process to receive complaints, but they are not logged or tracked unless they result in an inspection. Further, the basis for not going through with an inspection is not logged or tracked. According to AMPCO staff, a process did previously exist under the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. But when the Marijuana Control Board was established, staff responsibilities, they were realigned, and the process of maintaining that log just it wasn't as high a priority as other duties associated with marijuana regulation. By not tracking the complaints, there is an increased risk that board staff may not investigate complaints, turnover, or may not investigate complaints timely. Recommendation number 3 is for the AMPCO director to develop written procedures for establishing the expiration dates for the marijuana handler permits. We tested 53 permits. We found 47 had inaccurate expiration dates. That's just due to a lack of written procedures, lack of training. We think this is an easy fix. Recommendation number 4 on page 13 is for the AMPCO director to segregate the duties for calculating and remitting the fees to local governments. Upon receipt of a new or renewal application, statutes require the board to copy that application and send it to the local regulatory authority for the local government in which the applicant desires to operate. They also send half of the application fees to the local government. So we looked at that process. We found that in FY17, $113,000 in fees were remitted to local governments, but there was only one staff person responsible for calculating and for then approving those payments out to the local governments, and those duties should be segregated. Again, an easy fix. The department response is on page 33 to the audit, and then the board's response is on page 35. Both the department and the board agreed with all recommendations.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. And I want to recognize that we've been joined by Co-Chair Foster, and I'm sure we'll be able to look to him.
Thank you, Co-Chair Seaton. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, Chris. On recommendation 1 and 2, it was a question I think Representative Guttenberg posed to AMPCO. So does that mean right now, essentially, that the alcohol side of the receipts are supporting the marijuana side of the receipts for enforcement?
Through the chair, right now we looked at whether they had the process for tracking their receipts and their expenditures. Right now they are partially funded by general funds, but they are able to track the activity for the board separately.
And then just a broader question, Mr. Chairman. So I know for an occupational license, for all the, 60 occupational licenses, it discusses that the board sets fees based on the number that are in there and investigations, and it's supposed to continue the operation of the board. This seems like a different board to me. Is that is there somewhere in statute that says that the marijuana board and the alcohol beverage control board must have receipts that support the services that they provide?
Through the chair, I'm aware of the occupational board statute. That's clear. We've discussed that. I'm going to have to ask the question to our auditor in Anchorage that led this audit, Christine Lumba, if the chair is willing. to have the auditor answer the question.
Ms. Lumba, are you there?
I am. For the record, Christine Lumba with LifeSetive Audit.
And do you need the question repeated?
I do, please.
Okay, if you could please repeat that, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. There's 60 or 70 occupational licenses, and we see those sunsets come up every year. And basically the receipts that are paid for by the individuals who are licensed under that board. Is there a similar law that says that the Marijuana Control Office, or I'm sorry, the Marijuana Control Board and the Alcohol Beverage Control Board have to seek the same receipts to essentially to make the board work, I guess.
Through the chair, I believe there is no explicit statutory requirement, but there is that legislative intent to cover costs and make them, I guess, self-sufficient.
Follow up. So I don't know if you can answer this question, but is that same requirement applied to something like a business license?
Through the chair, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Sure.
In the marijuana statute, there is an authority for the board to employ enforcement agents that it considers necessary to carry out their purposes.
So, to the auditor, but it doesn't say that it can't be in excess of the amount to enforce those, enforce the what the board recommendations are.
Through the chair, I do not recall any statutory requirement about excess application fees received.
I guess. It just looks, I mean, it's a slight distinction, but, you know, when we're licensing individuals, we know that that individual pays a certain amount based on what they are. These are businesses. It seems more similar or analogous to, say, a business license or something else that you'd have to get. And if we're asking for receipts to support the enforcement of that, it seems like it just seems a little bit different than an occupational license. Just observation.
Through the chair, I agree. They are different. They are not under the division of corporations and business professional licensing. They are in its own board with its own supporting office, which is AMCO, and AMCO employs a staff to support their activities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Curtis, do you in your audits, do you review board actions for their legality, whether their determinations have been legal or erroneous?
Through the chair, when we are testing licenses, we're just making sure that they're complying with statute and the issuance of a license. When we're looking at investigations, our criteria has to do with the timeliness of the investigations. We do not evaluate whether we agree with whether it's an occupational investigation. Or whether it's this board, we do not get into whether we agree with their decision or even with the board's actions taken against a specific licensee.
Follow up?
I'll just say it. So apart from licensees, and I could have this misremembered, so I'm willing to stand corrected. But as I recall the initiative, it authorized the use of concentrates as well. I have concerns about concentrates, but as I recall, the board said no concentrates even for medical marijuana users, which, and as I recall, the word concentrates was in the initiative, and I would have been perfectly fine if it was limited to medical marijuana users, but as I recall, they said not even for medical marijuana users. That's not something that you would look at to see whether they violated the law and a ruling on that, even if I even have the ruling correct?
Correct. That wasn't part of the scope. However, if things like that come up and we, during our survey phase, and we find that this is an issue from the public, we review newspaper articles, board meeting minutes. If it becomes an issue, we will do work to evaluate it, but it did not pop up as any concern during our initial review of board meeting minutes.
Through through the chair. I won't base my vote on renewal of a board based on one of their rulings, but I do recall that vaguely clearly. So, all right, thanks.
Vaguely clearly.
Yeah, wouldn't stake my life or reputation on it. So.
Okay, do we have any further questions of the committee? We have two questions, or one question, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Ms. Curtis, going back to your recommendations, and they have to do with procedures and timeliness, do you believe by putting those processes in place for their employees that they would create the efficiencies to allow them to do those things? And if not, well, and regardless of that, are you aware whether or not the AMCO board has asked OMB for additional authorization for PCM or not?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, not something we looked at as part of the scope of the audit, and the field work was done last October before the budget would have been out. We did not, possibly we would have if we would have had different results from the audit, but our results were fairly positive. We did not focus in on whether the level of the resources were adequate. We know that they have limited resources. They were given limited resources. We just looked to whether improvements could be done on how they were using those limited resources rather than whether they had enough resources.
So just to follow through.
Follow up.
So, okay. Do you think it can be accomplished with the resources they have now?
Through the chair, we found the board was operating fairly well, and from the survey responses, it appears that the licensees and the local governments regarded that their operations were very positive.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grant. Did you have a question? No. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, thank you, Ms. Curtis. Next up, we'd like to bring Sarah Chambers, the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, to the table to walk the committee through the department's fiscal note. She's online. Ms. Chambers, are you there? It's Erica McConnell. Ms. McConnell, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here.
And Ms. McConnell, if you could walk the committee through the fiscal note.
Sure. So we've identified that the Marijuana Control Board, or the addition of the duties for marijuana and regulating marijuana and supporting the board, brought on eight additional staff members to the AMCO office, and we have requested $1.815 million in the FY19 budget, and that breaks down to $920,000 in personal services, $73,000 in travel. Keep in mind that the board is required to meet in each judicial district at least once per year, and we find that the board has a minimum of 5 board meetings per year and often more due to being a new industry, the number of issues that they have to address. $750,000 in services. This includes information technology and Commerce Department support, support from the Department of Law, hearing services through the Office of Administrative Hearings in the Department of Administration, leases. We have our main staff is in Anchorage, but we have 2 investigators in Fairbanks and 1 investigator in Juneau, meeting space rental and the like, and then $71,000 in commodities, which include printing statute of regulation books, ammunition and other enforcement training supplies, office supplies, and the like. As noted earlier, our FY19 request does have $532,000 requested from unrestricted general funds, but in outlying years, that would go down to zero, and we would be starting in FY20 fully supported by our program receipts.
Thank you, Ms. McConnell. We've got a question from Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you. So do you not foresee, I mean, it looks like your out-year cost estimates remain the same for all 5 years. Do you not foresee any sort of increases in costs, whether that's personnel costs or even services over that time frame?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, at this time, I wouldn't say that we wouldn't have increased costs in the outlying years, but at this time, we wouldn't know what they were. So I didn't want to estimate without really having a sense of what we will need in the future.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Okay. Well, I guess my only point to that is I don't have an issue with necessarily what you're asking. It's just making sure that as time goes, that you guys are getting the right, setting the right fees in the future when it comes time to look at setting those fees to recover your costs going forward. And I would expect that costs would go up, and that should be, you know, of course, considered as you are analyzing those future, setting those fees in the future. Thank you,
Representative Pruitt.
Do we have any further questions of the for the fiscal note? Seeing no questions, thank you, Ms. McConnell. And with that, I am going to go ahead and open public testimony on HB 273. And public testimony is open. Let's see here. Okay. Do we have anybody in the room, first of all, who would like to testify? And online, it looks like Bruce Schulte. Are you online?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Carroll.
Thanks for being here, Mr. Schulte. If you could just state your name and your affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Bruce Schulte. Calling from Anchorage. I'm speaking today on behalf of the campaign to regulate marijuana. And I'd like to thank the committee members for hearing my testimony today. I did submit some written notes just recently, earlier in the afternoon, so I apologize to committee members for not able to get those in a timely manner. I won't belabor all three pages of it, so I'd just like to hit a couple of bullet points, if I may. I'll speak up a little bit. There's three things I just wanted to touch on briefly, and they are enforcement, testing, and taxes. But first of all, let me just state this, we're very clear on this. I support HB 273 in its present form. I do think that it's appropriate and desirable to extend the sunset date of the board out, and so I'm not suggesting any changes to this bill at this time. Just want to be very clear on that. And again, if I may, with the committee's indulgence, I'd like to just touch on a couple of related issues.
Sure, Mr. Schulte, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, enforcement. We've heard through one of the auditor's recommendations was that the board, staff, and enforcement arrived at some sort of a concise policy on enforcement. And I would like to suggest that be not just a recommendation, but a priority of the board. Not only are they dealing with limited resources, as has already been discussed, but there have been occasions where enforcement has enforced not merely statute or regulation as written, but also somewhat subjective interpretations of either one of those. And I think that gets a little bit out of their scope of authority, and I think it has created some angst amongst the industry that they're attempting to regulate. The board granted fairly broad enforcement authority to staff back in 2016. It's a measure that I adamantly opposed because I thought that it could be abused. And though I'm not suggesting any ill intent, it has created some problems. So I do think that should be a priority of the Marijuana Control Board and the AMCO office, just to maintain and reestablish some trust and credibility with the industry. Moving on to testing, the committee members may have heard in the media that there's been some questions about testing. we've only got two labs in the state right now, and their existence is absolutely key to the success of this industry. There's been some challenges. Other states have had similar challenges, and they're working through those. There is a committee that's been established. I believe they're meeting tomorrow, actually, to talk about this. And I'm hoping that they'll come up with some good recommendations that everybody can be comfortable with. One of those recommendations may well be to use existing state resources, laboratory resources, as third-party validation for these labs. If that does become the recommendation, I would hope that the legislature would consider that and the funding that would go with it. That said, I wholeheartedly agree that this effort needs to be self-sustaining. Finally, as to taxes, this is a broad and intricate question, so I'll try and just bullet point it for you because I think it's a discussion we'll probably come back to again later time. Ballot Measure 2 was very specific. It called for a $50 per ounce excise tax, which equates to $800 per pound. That's something that only a legislature can change. It further authorized the Department of Revenue to establish a different tax on other parts of the plant. In 2015, the Marijuana Control Board adopted a resolution recommending a tax of $10 per ounce for the lower quality parts of the plant. Revenue came back with a $15 per ounce tax. Not the end of the world, but that is a near-term opportunity, I think, revenue could fix. And just to address the obvious question, I think Representative Pruitt sort of alluded to this earlier. I'm not suggesting the state shouldn't get tax revenue from this industry. I absolutely think they should. But I think a more creative approach to it, a different approach now, the benefit of some market data and a maturing industry, I think we've got an opportunity to allow this industry to be more productive, more successful, more profitable, and ultimately I think that that will translate to even more consistent revenues for the state. I could get down the weeds on that, but it's fairly detailed subject, and again, I don't see that changing. I don't see the $50 excise tax changing this year just due to other legislative priorities, but hopefully next year we can revisit this, and by then we'll have a solid 2 years of market data to look back on. And as the director mentioned earlier, there has been discussion within the industry of moving from a flat excise tax to a percentage tax, possibly putting that on the retail end instead of the wholesale end. Again, that's a more detailed discussion than we probably need to get into today, but I would just like to put that on everyone's radar because I think it's an important one that we have next year. With that, I'll just answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Schulte. We've got a question from Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks, Bruce. So my concern is it doesn't sound like you've really kept alcohol and marijuana separate. So, and maybe you've seen something different. Are you sure that the fees that are in here are enough to cover what marijuana does without any extra support from the alcohol funds that come in?
To the Chair, Representative Wilson, I don't have the numbers as close to me as the director does. I understand that the goal is for the fees paid to the AMCO office to support those efforts. That part makes sense. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, so I apologize. If the question is whether or not the two boards should be separate or they should be combined, I think there's a lot of ways to look at that. But I think as long as you have two different boards that are devoted to their respective industries, I think it's okay that staff resources are shared. And I apologize if I ran around the triage. I'm not even sure if I answered your question properly.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
And Bruce, I'm okay with the structure of it. What my concern is that there's records being kept for the alcohol board and the fees are paid by that industry and the marijuana and the industry paying for their part of it. I'm just trying to make sure with the fees, because we're not okay in the alcohol board here. We're only the marijuana board. One of the things that we are required to do is to make sure that enough fees are being collected to do the investigations to open up the ones for your industry. Are you okay with the way these fees are, that it will cover your industry?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Wilson. Yeah, I think I understand the question better. I thought that we were setting the fees high, but I was convinced rather quickly that we needed to keep them at pretty much the statutory maximum at that time, so that we could fund the efforts of the Marijuana Control Board. So I don't have any qualms with that, and I haven't heard anybody express any particular issue with that, as long as they're getting value for their money. I think if these licensees are able to operate as, you know, as profitable businesses, I think if the fees had to, you know, go up 10% to cover the costs, I don't think anybody would balk at that overly much. I think it's more important that they're being treated fairly, that they know what to expect for those fees, and that they're not being prevented from being successful.
Thank you.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, one question I do want to ask you, Bruce, is Mr. Schulte, sorry, Bruce. You mentioned that you're going to ask the board to come forward and request, in terms of laboratory discussions, that the state participate and even funding. I think the best way I see this conversation is more of we're talking about renewing the board, but I guess this is also our opportunity to set our expectations of what we think what should come from the board. So as you present this to us, I want to make sure that we have a discussion about did I understand that correctly, that you would potentially like to see the board come to us and ask for funding as well as utilization of state facilities to be able to help maintain the industry?
Thank you for that. Through the chair, Representative Pruitt. First of all, I can't speak for the board. They need to consider this and come up with some recommendations. I'm just sort of going off discussions I've had with industry representatives. We have a challenge in that we have only two labs in the state, and their test results have found to vary by percentages that make one wonder, okay, who's right, or who can even tell us who is right? You know, what numbers are valid? So then the question becomes, okay, who is that third party lab that we can turn to? There are labs out of the state that could potentially be contracted to do that. I think that they had been contracted to look at processes that the different labs are following. But in terms of validating their actual results, it may be that one of the recommendations is to use existing lab facilities within the state. The labs themselves are relatively expensive to set up, and so it might be economical to validate the labs in the state by turning to some other laboratory that's not affiliated with the industry, doesn't have an economic association with the companies that they're testing. So if it comes to that, clearly somebody has to pay for that, and it should probably be the marijuana industry through the Marijuana Control Board, and I support that. But I would just ask that the legislature be open to that discussion. If that proves to be the most viable way to achieve surety in the public's mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, thank you, Mr. Schulte, for your testimony. Next up, we have Mark Springer calling in from Bethel. Mark, if you're there, if you could identify yourself and your affiliation.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm here, Mr. Chairman. If I ask any members, thank you for this opportunity to testify today on House Bill 273, extending the Alaska Marijuana Control Board. I'm Mark Springer, chairman of the Alaska Marijuana Control Board, and I've been the rural member of the board since our inception in 2015. Through the chair, I'd like to extend our appreciation to Representative Keto for introducing this piece of legislation, as well as offer our thanks to Legislative Budget and Audit for the job they did. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to respond really quickly to Representative Guerra's concern about concentrates. We do, in fact, license concentrate manufacturers. We have never made a ruling against concentrates. We have had some talk about not allowing concentrates in possible on-site consumption venues, but we do allow the manufacture and sale of concentrates. We license concentrate products. Mr. Chairman, the Marijuana Control Board has 5 members, and we meet just about every 2 months. Because of the newness of the legal marijuana industry, we have a significant workload at each meeting, but I have to say that, the board's workload is nothing compared to the workload of the AMCO office staff under the leadership of Director McConnell, the enforcement staff under James Holscher, enforcement supervisor, and I also want to extend our appreciation for the very competent counsel we have from the Department of Law, Assistant Attorney General Mills. Our regulations are crafted to protect the public health and safety, first and foremost, and to keep the legal marijuana industry Alaskan. I believe we have been successful on these counts. As citizen regulators, we take our responsibility very seriously, and I believe that is evidenced by enforcement actions we have taken, including license revocations and significant fines for regulation violations. We've made several applicants change their names because of references to medical marijuana, which we do not regulate. We've also refused to license some products out of an abundance of caution and concern about their appearance and the possible attractiveness of the products to children. We essentially continue to follow the rubric set out in the Cole Memorandum, which was guidance from the U.S. Department of Justice to United States attorneys, again, out of an abundance of caution and basically respect for the fact that the federal government is there. So a couple other things I'd like to say, Mr. Chairman, on the issue of fees. The fees we collect are really a function of the number of license applications that we receive, and I suppose we could do the math and figure out how many licenses we'd have to get to cover the costs, but I don't think that the board should find itself in the position of having a quota of licenses to approve. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll be pleased to answer any questions that you or the committee might have, and I encourage House Finance Committee to pass out HB 273 with a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. We've got a question from Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Springer, thank you for serving on the board, as certainly since its conception, and a growing something from scratch. We're going to hear a bill later this week in this committee dealing with hemp farming. And one of the issues with hemp farming is the distance between a marijuana facility and a hemp farm is critical for the marijuana facility. The distance is very important. And we put some language in the legislation to address that, to make sure that they are not too close together, for lack of a better term. Has the board looked at this for being part of that decision-making process of what is the appropriate decision to ensure the safety of your licensees?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, we haven't looked at that. I haven't looked at that bill. We do from time to time have comments from individuals at our meetings or in our marijuana mailbox, our public record email, talking about hemp farming. I'll just point out that our licensees basically have a red line restricted area around their licensed establishment. Some of these are, you know, downtown Juneau establishments. Some of these are possibly, I don't know exactly where you live in Fairbanks, Representative, but, maybe a neighbor of yours with a small limited cultivate operation. But there's a red line. That's the restricted area that is where the licensed activities take place. I imagine that there would be some individuals who are growing marijuana commercially under, with a license, who would also like to cultivate hemp. But that really, the H word doesn't appear in our statute, so it really wouldn't be our bailiwick, but I'm sure that as the bill moves along, we would be happy to get a briefing either from, you know, a legislative staff or our council or our staff about it, and possibly make, you know, some recommendations on the issue of space in between licenses.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guntberg.
So I think you're going in a different direction. In Colorado, a hemp farm cannot be within 5 miles of a marijuana facility. In Canada, I think it's 10. So we have statutes, and it's a blowing pollen issue. And I'd never heard of it until last year. But we have some language in the in that bill that allows cross consultation between the departments to be able to come up with a reasonable restriction on what that number is. So thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions for Mr. Springer? Seeing none, appreciate your testimony. We've got three people in Anchorage and one in Cooper Landing. Jason Brandis in Anchorage, if you're there, if you could state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jason Brandis. I'm a professor of justice and legal studies at UAA, and my main area of research is marijuana law and policy. So that's an affiliation, but I'm not here speaking on behalf of the university today. In addition to my work as a professor, I also work as an attorney where I advise clients on a variety of marijuana law-related issues. So I am here to speak on this bill today on behalf of my clients and the marijuana industry. In my capacity as both a researcher and a practicing attorney, I've had the opportunity to interact with and monitor the activities of the AMCO staff and the Marijuana Control Board over the past few years. In my experience, the Marijuana Control Board and the AMCO staff have worked very hard during the past few years to develop and implement a strong regulatory framework for the marijuana industry in Alaska. This has not been an easy task, as the legal framework surrounding marijuana nationwide is continuously shifting. Despite these challenges, the board has functioned in a very professional and fair manner, and I believe that maintaining the board is necessary to both the future success of this industry and to protecting public health and safety. I therefore strongly support HB 273 and extending the term of the Marijuana Control Board. Thank you for the time and opportunity to make these comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Brandis. Are there any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you very much. Let's move over to Kim Cole in Anchorage. If you're there, if you could also state your name and your affiliation.
Hi, yes, this is Kim Cole. Thank you very much to the committee for hearing my testimony today. I own Raspberry, and I'm in Anchorage. I own Raspberry Roots, which is currently cultivation, soon to open retail. So I'm calling to support HB 273 to extend the board's expiration date to 2024. It's imperative to have a functional control board for the cannabis industry. And while there are regulations in place, as the industry grows and new situations arise, those regulations need to be tweaked in order to continue to create a safe environment for the people of Alaska. This requires a knowledgeable board to weigh in and adjust them. Without such, the industry is potentially subject to inconsistencies and stagnation. It would be in the state's best interest to allow them to guide the industry as we mature. They have done an excellent professional job so far, but there's still much work to be done.
And do we have any questions for Ms. Cole? Seeing no questions, thank you very much. Next we have Leah Levinson in Anchorage. If you're there, if you could also state your name and your affiliation.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leah Levinson. I'm located in Anchorage. I am also representing a marijuana license, a retail marijuana license. I'm the co-owner of Enlighten Alaska, and I am in support of HB 273. I definitely recognize the diligence and hard work of the Marijuana Control Board and the
Director McConnell, and again, support HB 273. I firmly believe in the continued existence of the Marijuana Control Board. It's so critical. Without the continued support and structure of the board, the development and progress of the responsible regulation of this new industry really could be pretty stifled, and it'll really help keep this industry consistent. It's really critical that the board continue to regulate this industry and keep that consistency moving forward. And I believe in my relations with the board that they've operated and acted very professionally thus far, and absolutely in the public's interest. And I support this bill 100% and appreciate your consideration to extend the termination date to 2024. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Levinson. Do we have any questions for Ms. Levinson? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. Edward Martin, calling in from Cooper Landing. Could you also state your name and your affiliation? Proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chairman, the Finance Committee and the staff there. And my comment is pretty simple. I've come to you people before any of the regulations was rolled out. They were rolled out before the board was even approved and vented properly. You recently had a chairman of the Marijuana Board to resign. Now, if you folks can't see the reasons why he did, surely he did not want to become a hypocrite. He has agreed under a memorandum of understanding under the Clinton administration that the enforcement of marijuana laws under the federal law would be done. He Mr. relied Martin. On a memorandum
Mr.
from
Martin.
An AG. That does not change the law, Chairman.
Mr. Martin, let's back up here for a second. I'd ask folks not to disparage other people if you have issues with how business is being run. Please keep it to the issue and not to disparaging other folks. Please continue.
Yes, Chairman. I would like to have equal time with some of the other people now that I've been cut off partly through this. I have a problem with my U.S. constitutional rights to be able to do business in any state in the union. And you guys have took testimony from Mr. Shelby, who apparently was removed from the board at some point, about whether or not you should contemplate another testing lab outside the state. Now, I believe either the state takes this thing by the horns and carries it through under states' rights issues and gets a understanding by our AG, or you abandon this whole thing. Now, I'm all for the taxes that you have levied. I don't think they should be changed. In fact, maybe they should be enforced even more. And then secondly, I know you want to stick to subject here. The subject is whether or not you should keep the board or not. Now, you know, you can't go forward with a board that's not vended properly. You folks have not looked at these people or the new replacements as of yet, from my understanding. So that should be done before you consider this bill. Secondly, as far as determining the difference between hemp and cannabis, it's a clear line. Yeah, there's a red line, all right. And you should immediately, as quickly as possible, authorize the growing of hemp in our state for the agricultural products that will be as valuable as the industry grows. And so as far as I'm concerned, I was eliminated in the first 2 years until I became qualified for a permanent fund dividend, for which I happened to have lost only because I wanted to serve my country. And, you know, I take exception that if you are a permanent fund dividend applicant, that you cannot do business in your own state. There's no other licensing that I understand exists and rests on the so-called understanding of a memorandum or a memo from an AG of one president. You guys already agreed under the Clinton administration to enforce the laws. You've gone back against it. Now, please get your legal act together, and I thank you for your this testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Martin? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. Let's see here. Is there anybody else in the room who would like to testify? And is there anybody else online who would like to testify? Seeing none, we will close public testimony on HB 273. And before I set the bill aside, does the committee have any questions or comments regarding the bill? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could just get, and I wanted to find a diagram. So on page 7 of the next bill that we have with the psychologists and associates, I'm just using for an example, they have the breakdown of, it's got the revenues, the expenditures. That's really what I'm uncertain of here. And this is probably one of the few audits I've seen that doesn't have that page in there where it shows how many licenses, how much money they brought in, and then their costs so that we can really verify. I'm not asking them to put more people into the marijuana business to be able to do it, but we are also required to make sure that the fees balance out the cost of the board. So I don't know whether that goes to the sponsor or to the board or whoever it is, but before we bring the bill back, I would like to see a breakdown of the cost so that we can be sure that they're actually meeting their qualifications.
And Representative Keto, Ms. Kinnaman.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Sam Keto, District 33. Representative Wilson, the statute, and we've just done a brief review, does indicate that the board has the authority to set and collect fees. It doesn't have a restriction on what it spends those fees on. So if the legislature has indicated that that money should be repaid, I imagine that they have statutory authority to do that. The situation we have right now is they are still operating with that first $1.5 million to establish the board. So they haven't actually got to a full year of collection and licenses, and we expect that that will be happening by the end of December next year, but I don't know how long after that they will be able to actually quantify their costs.
Thank you for again for the record. My name is Crystal Kinnaman, staff to Representative Keto. Representative Wilson, to your point about, for example, right, the next bill that we're going to hear, in 08-01-065, the central licensing statutes that govern professional licensees, statute very clearly says that the regulatory costs must be borne by that board. There is no such restriction for the Marijuana Control Board. So my understanding is that's probably why there's not that same similar breakdown, because statute in 1738-121, the powers and duties of the Marijuana Board, are not explicit that those fees must cover the regulatory costs.
Mr. Chairman?
All of it?
We're in a crisis. We don't have money. So I don't think we want another board that's not going to be able to hold up their own. So my mistake that they're not required to do it, but I think the voters on either side felt that this industry, if it became an industry, should be able to take care of whatever they needed to do. And on these numbers, I can't tell you. I understand that they're still using general fund money, but they still have costs that come out. I know they're sharing with the alcohol board, so all of them are not there. But we're looking for a six-year extension. I'd like to have some kind of knowledge that they're not going to come back in 6 years to be like the big board game was and be millions of dollars in arrears and having to siphon off general funds. So you know, just any kind of counting they have, I know it won't all match up, but just so we have a better understanding of what resources that they are using.
And Representative Wilson, through the chair, I will work with the board to try to pull as close as I can. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Representative Keto.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, also, if you do review the fiscal note, there is an expense and revenue component that goes out through 2024, and expenses at $1.8 million approximately and revenues at $1.8 million. That $1.8 million this year includes $500,000 of general fund, which is part of that startup money. And then, so they do have an estimate of what their expenses will be. They do have an estimate of what their revenues will be. Of course, they will not actually match up, and there will have to be corrections as they go along. But we haven't actually completed a full year, so we don't have more accurate recognition of those expenses.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? With that, we will set aside HB 273. We'll bring it up under bills previously heard. Amendments will be due to Jane Pearson in my office. We ask that they be turned in by 5 p.m. this Friday, February 9th, 2018. And so with that, let's move on to the next, the second of the three board extensions we have before us. We have HB 274. It's a bill that extends the termination date for the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners. So at this time, Representative Keto and your aide, Ms. Caitlin Ellis, if you could put yourselves on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to come before you yet again. My name is Sam Keto, Representative House District 33, and the bill you have before you, House Bill 274, is an extension of the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associates. Division of Legislative Audit has provided a recommendation of an 8-year extension on this board, and it indicated that the board is serving the public interest. I will leave it to our legislative auditor to go into additional detail about the legislative audit. But basically, this is a longstanding board that has provided services and licensing for psychologists in the state of Alaska and is doing a fine job of doing that. And with that, I would entertain any questions, or we can move on to the legislative auditor.
I would like to note that we're joined by Representative Stutes. Thanks for being here. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you, Representative Keto and Ms. Ellis. And see, I also want to note that we have Ellen Levy, Chair of the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Examiners, as well as Robert Lane from the Alaska Psychological Association. They are also available for questions if there are any questions. Ms. Curtis, if you could come up and from the legislative audit and briefly walk us through the sunset audit for the Board of Psychological Psychologists. And if you could also just put yourself on the record again.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Curtis, your state legislative auditor. You should have a copy in your packets dated October 2017. Overall, we did find that this board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating psychologists and psychological associate examiners. We found that this board monitored licensees and worked to ensure that only qualified individuals practice. We recommend an 8-year extension. Page 5 of this report is the schedule of licensing activities. You will see that at the end of March 2017, they had 285 active licensees, and this is a 174% increase since the prior sunset audit in 2009. They have a schedule of revenues and expenditures, and that is on page 7. The board had a surplus of just around $400,000 at the end of FY17, and the audit does note that license fees were increased in FY17 despite the surplus. And that happened basically just an oversight by DCBPL management. The board was concerned about having equal fees for psychologists versus psychological associates. And when they looked at the fees and changing them, they did not take into consideration the surplus overall. And so fees were increased and the surplus did grow. We do have two recommendations. First is on page 9. That is for the board and DCBPL to reduce fees to address the surplus. And the second is on page 10. We recommend DCBPL's director implement procedures to ensure courtesy licensees are complying with reporting requirements. Courtesy licensees are restricted to practicing no more than 30 days in a year. They do they're required to submit monthly reports to so they can be tracked and ensure that requirement is complied with. We found that the monthly reports are not being required. The department's response to the audit is on page 21, and the board's response is on page 23. Both the board and the department concurred with the conclusions and recommendations.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you. We will next move on to the fiscal note, and I believe, Ms. Lumba, are you going to walk us through that? Oh, you're here. Oh, mixing it up today. Ms. Chambers, Sarah Chambers. She's with the Division of Operations, Manager of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Now that I said that, if you could also restate that and just put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers, Division Operations Manager for the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. I'm happy to go through the fiscal note and answer any other questions that you may have about the operations of the board. And with our 21 licensing boards that are under our division, we're structured, as was pointed out in the previous bill, we're structured a little differently than the Marijuana Control Board. So our fiscal note will read a little bit differently than theirs does. When our board sunset, the operations go back to the department to manage. The program doesn't disappear. So our fiscal notes reflect the finite budgetable costs of the physical presence of a board, not the operations of what the board does. So you'll see that we would continue to do what we're doing now, and the board expenses that would add to continue would be $21,400 in each of the years that it would be extended. 19.9 of that is travel. Our boards are doing an excellent job in reducing the expense for travel, incorporating video conferencing, teleconferencing. So this is just the statutory requirement. It could be lower. And then there's a cost for advertising, public notice, training and conferences, and legally allowable stipends for board members attending board meetings so they can, like a per diem. So the total cost of finite costs of the board itself are $21,400.
Great, thank you. Does the committee have any questions regarding the fiscal note? Seeing no questions, thank you, Ms. Chambers. So with that, we'll move into public testimony. Public testimony on HB 274 is now open. And I have two people on the list here I believe might be available for questions and not testimony. Mr. Lane and Mr. Levy, are you available for questions or did you want to testify?
This is Al Levy, board chairman of the psychology board. I've been standing by to take questions and I'm prepared to offer a brief comment.
Okay, if you could put your, let's see, it sounds like you put yourself on the record. If you could go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Again, this is Alan Levy. I'm calling from Anchorage. I'm the chair of the psychology board. Basically, I concur with the findings of the audit committee. We have already taken steps to implement the two recommendations. We agree that we are serving a necessary public function, and we look forward to continuing to serve the state and the people of Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Levy. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, appreciate it. Mr. Lane, Robert Lane, if you wanted to also testify, if you could just put yourself on the record and proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Robert Lane. I'm a licensed psychologist. I'm also the chair of the Legislative Committee of the Alaska Psychological Association. And just wanted to present a few comments in favor of the bill moving it forward and giving it 8 more years. We believe psychology has done a wonderful service for the people of Alaska. The board has done a great job of protecting the citizens of Alaska and making sure safety is always going there. I would point out that the profession in terms of people practicing need the regulations to help guide their practice. And as a professor at Alaska Pacific University in the doctoral program here, we also think that the regulations provide us great guidance in terms of providing educational guidance for our students. So we're very much in support of House Bill 274. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you very much. Do we have anybody in the room who would like to testify on HB 274, I mean? Seeing nobody, is there anybody online who would like to testify? Okay. And with that, we will close public testimony on HB 274. And we will now move over to making sure that there are no questions for the sponsor. Seeing no further questions or comments, we will set HB 274 aside and bring it up under bills previously heard. Another reminder on amendments, they will be due to Jane Pearson in my office. If folks could get them to her by 5 p.m. on Friday, February 9th, 2018. And we'll move to our last bill, which is HB 275. It's a bill that extends the termination date for the Board of Massage Therapists. And so at this time, if we could have Representative Keto and his aide, Crystal Keeneman, come to the table and present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and welcome. Thank you for bringing House Bill 275 up. House Bill 275 is an extension of the Board of Massage Therapy, and this also is another board that was recently created and is, has been actually operating and operating very effectively. And so this bill actually does an extension for the Massage Therapist Board. There are some other issues that we've been working on. We do have a piece of legislation that is still pending, and we are trying to identify some of those issues that we might be able to do to help the board operate more effectively. But for the purposes of this bill, we believe that extending the termination date of the Board of Massage Therapy is warranted, and I'm available to ask or answer any questions. I also have my staff, Mr. Keeneman, available to provide some additional information and also available to ask, answer questions.
Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you, Representative Keto and Ms. Keeneman.
Thank you.
Also available for questions, we have the board chair for the massage therapists, David Edward Smith, and with that, we will bring up Ms. Chris Curtis. If you could also put yourself on the record again and just proceed with your audit.
For the record, I'm Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. As Representative Keto mentioned, this is a new board. This is its first sunset, and as such, we did include some information and background information about the creation of the board. This audit found that this board is serving the public's interest in all areas except licensing. We found that they, in general, the meetings were conducted effectively, investigations were appropriately processed, and the board actively issued and amended regulations to improve the industry and protect the public. In regards to licensing, the audit found that applicants were not consistently issued licenses in accordance with statutes, regulations, and their procedures. Additionally, there was an FBI audit that found improvements were needed to comply with the federal standards over criminal history information that is obtained as part of the licensing process. We recommend the legislature extend this board 4 years. Information you may find useful when you're considering extension. Page 11 is the scheduled licensing activity. From FY16 through August of 2017, the board issued 1,186 licenses, and this is almost double the number, the 600 that they expected to issue. The schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 14. The board had a surplus of just over $265,000 at the end of FY17. License fees were lowered in FY18 to address the surplus. We do make three recommendations, which start on page 17. The first recommendation is the DCB PL director, in consultation with the board, to improve procedures to ensure the licensure requirements are met. We tested 31 licenses, and we found three applications. The documentation did not support the issuance of the license. And if you look on page 17, I'll go through the findings. The first issue was a background check report was not obtained as part of the initial license. There was a problem with the fingerprint card. It went back and forth, and then just the staff just dropped it off the monitoring checklist, and the ball got dropped, and that applicant didn't obtain a background check report until they renewed. The second issue was an applicant answered yes on a professional fitness question, and there was no evidence that that was ever followed up and considered prior to issuing the license. And then we have one instance where an applicant had answered yes to a professional fitness question, and they had provided support as they were required to. Court records are additional documentation, wasn't court records in this case, but additional documentation that explained that their a national massage license had gotten revoked due to violations on their standards of conduct and code of ethics. The board did issue the license. They did require a two-hour ethics course, and they did this based on a clean background check. But the internal procedures required that this information be forwarded to investigations for additional research in consideration for public safety. So with these three situations we found, we do believe there is a need for improved procedures over the licensing. Recommendation number two, on page 18, recommends the DCBPL director address the FBI findings and concerns. Now, the audit was done in 2017, April. It did find that the DCBPL had used an unsecured private website to transfer confidential criminal history information. Additionally, applicants were not notified in writing that their fingerprints would be used for a background check, and there's also federal requirements that they be informed of the procedure for correcting a record associated with the background check and that type of thing. Further, this is the most concerning, they found an inadequate chain of custody over the fingerprint cards. So this was in April, and we were in, there in October, and found that only one of the one issue had been addressed, and that was the application had been changed to inform the applicants, so that had been addressed, but the other findings were still outstanding. So the recommendation. Recommendation number three on page 19, we recommend Office of the Governor, Boards and Commission staff work to fill the public member position. The position became vacant in March 2017. In October, it was still vacant. Now, statutes state that the public member may not be a licensed health care provider, may not be a state employee, or a current or former member of another occupational board. So according to the Director of Boards and Commissions, these stringent requirements make it difficult to find interested applicants. So the response to the audit is on page 29 from Office of the Governor, and they do agree that the recommendation regarding the board vacancy, and they are recommending a legislative fix to the board member requirement. Department response is on page 31. The department does agree that additional checks are needed to ensure that the administrative record is adequate. However, they do state that they believe new additional supervisory resources are needed to help ensure that their standards are met. In regards to the FBI audit finding, the department considered that new information because prior FBI audits had not identified those issues. So they considered that new information, and they stated they were working quickly to address the findings. And the board's response is on page 33. The board agrees with the conclusions and recommendations.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Does the committee have any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guttenberg.
So the FBI and the licensing requirements on fingerprints, and so how, what other boards and commissions have the same requirement? Do we know, and have they been audited by the FBI, and what, you might not have audited them yet, but I'm just wondering if there are results in.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, I think that would be an excellent question for the department, as I would assume that the audit covered the whole department's process, not just for this board.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have any further questions of the committee? Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Curtis. Just in relation to the concerns that were brought up in terms of chain of custody, when, did you feel that those faults of the department potentially allowed for certain people to be licensed that should not? It sounded like there was one or two cases that you gave, but if there were double the amount of people that they estimated, did you feel that that was systemic, or were those potentially unique situations that you identified in those faults?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, recommendation number one that had to do with our licensing errors, it's 31, 3 out of 31, they were randomly selected. So we consider that a significant problem. We did find that there's some problems with the staff that were assigned to the board that have since been corrected. So whether it's something that could have already been addressed going forward, that is why we're recommending a shorter term, so we can come in and give another look, see and see how well that licensing. It is a new board. I know they have struggled. It is a learning process for new board members to understand their role as far as approving applications and what they can and can't do, what can they question, what can't they question. So I think it's partly growing pains.
Okay. Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, thank you, Ms. Curtis. So at this time, I will go ahead and open public testimony on HB 275. And is there anybody in the room who would like to testify? Seeing nobody in the room, let's see here. Online, it looks like I have a number of folks here who are listed as available for questions, but just in case I'm missing anybody online who would like to testify, is there anybody online who would like to testify? And hearing nobody, we will go ahead and close public testimony on HB 275. And Representative Seaton and then Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under questions, the chair of the massage board, is he available?
And it looks like that would be Mr. Smith. Edward Smith, are you there?
Yes.
Representative Seaton has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that there's some question about the concerns regarding background checks, and what is the position of the board on the background check issue?
Yes, through the chair, thank you for the question. Currently, the board's position is that we feel it is imperative that we have background checks upon initial licensure. But we are on record of having the position of reducing the burden on applicants who are renewing for licensure and moving that to requirement to every three cycles rather than every cycle.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And what is the cost of the the background checks, and who bears that cost?
Yes, through the chair. The cost of the background checks, there is a cost of the fingerprinting cards themselves, which is approximately $20, and then the background check is another, I think it's somewhere near $60. Or we would have to clarify those costs with the division, and that burden of that cost is upon the licensee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. No? Okay. If there are no further questions, Ms. Chambers, if you could walk the committee through the fiscal note, if you could also, again, put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. I'm happy to go through the fiscal note and answer any of the questions that may have been directed to the department earlier. Regarding the fiscal note, much like the psychology board's fiscal note, these are just the board's specific costs, since if this board is sunset, the licensing process would go back and be managed fully by the department. The costs are very similar to the psychology boards. The total cost of the board is $21,400, and just under $20,000 of that is for statutorily required board meetings. Again, all of our boards are working to keep those costs down and utilizing technology instead of meeting in person when practicable. There's also a cost of $400 for public notice of board meetings, $1,000 for training and conference fees, and $100 for per diem for meetings.
Okay, do we have any questions of the committee? Representative Pruitt and then Seaton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I wanted to ask about, of course, the item, the financial items that might not necessarily be on here. And I would like to reference the letter from the commissioner back to Ms. Curtis, and it's, of course, related to recommendation one. That he highlights in there that one of the reasons that they feel that there is a challenge is that with over 13,000 new licenses, which I believe he's referencing all licenses, not just in this particular board, issued in FY17, additional supervisory resources needed to ensure that all license files are reviewed to meet the standard. Is the commissioner indicating that you're going to need additional people to deal with the increased burden on, of course, this board's only a couple years old, it's double what it is, and if so, how would that be reflected in terms of the fees across, because I believe that would be spread across all of the various boards, how would that be reflected if there is a request or a need from the division for additional people to help supervise or whatnot?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, we at this time are not requesting additional personnel. We're working with the board and through the information provided through this audit and the information that we knew previous to the audit, much of which was reflected in the audit, to determine whether some of the challenges were associated with not only the startup of a new board, but also having twice the licensees that we expected. Once that initial hump is over, which it is now since they've all renewed, we think that there will be a stabilization in the process. So we're trying to be judicious about asking for new positions and don't have anything formal in the works to do so, but we are looking at, regularly looking at all of our programs because professional licensing is not diminishing. We're constantly growing in the number of licensees and the requirements of our board, so we want to make sure that we have the resources able to meet the expectations of the public.
Follow up?
And if that decision is made at some future time frame, will there be enough notice given to essentially all the boards so that they make sure that their fees, because I believe we had heard earlier that there was that their fees would potentially go down in this particular department, mm-hmm. that they do not undercharge in fees so that can be covered and we're not having to cover through UGF or other areas if in the future.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, we are not authorized to accept any UGF. We're all license fee supported, and all of our staff maintain positive timekeeping. So we make sure that our 43 licensing programs are only being charged what our staff is actually working on for them. There are a few exceptions, such as managers, such as myself, manager of our investigative wing, certain administrative staff who may be dealing with all 43 licenses, such as receding regularly. They are charging to a general indirect, and there's a methodology for calculating it. But the lion's share of our staff and those costs are being charged directly to those programs to make sure that we are accurately reflecting the cost of managing them. If we were to expect any dramatic increase, such as hiring a full PCN for this program, which I can tell you is not what we necessarily need right now, and it would be unusual. We actually have a half-time person for this program. We would definitely talk about that with the board and make sure it was the public and licensees were on notice as to the potential additional cost.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I was on the first page of the audit talking about federal standards over criminal history information as part of the licensing process. Is that a department issue or is that this board issue? I was somewhat confused on whether that went to all of the department usage or whether that's a board question.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, The FBI findings are specifically administrative. They're specifically with our division. And as Legislative Auditor Curtis mentioned, this was new information. We received the FBI audit just a couple of months before this audit started. We've addressed two out of the three issues have been resolved. The one that is not resolved is the chain of custody issue. We've worked with the Department of Public Safety to look into that, and they have confirmed that there is no legal mechanism through our statute to address chain of custody. So we're having to look at some optional alternative plans to not overly burden our licensees and make sure that we can maintain the administration of fingerprint records while also ensuring that a proper chain of custody is in place.
Follow up?
So on that chain of custody issue, is there any fallout if we don't get that solved between us and the federal government as far as not maintaining that chain of custody and that have an impact on whether licensees are recognized in other states or anything else?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we are audited by the FBI every 3 years. And to speak to Representative Guttenberg's question, we have five programs that require fingerprinting, and they are all audited at the same time by the FBI. We're not aware of any potential negative repercussions to the licensees if this isn't resolved, but we are recognizing it's an issue and that it's our responsibility to work with our various state agencies to make sure it does get resolved.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Guttenberg, and then Wilson.
Thank you. Just following up on the same line, so there's five boards that have licensed fingerprint requirements, and I assume the FBI audited all of them. Were the findings the same? And because we don't have statutory authority to do chain of custody, did they all have the same problem, and are we addressing them across the board?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, yes, we are working as a division with all the relevant staff to make sure that the FBI findings in both office locations, Juneau and Anchorage, are being addressed systemically so we can make sure that both locations are meeting those standards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I was reading these recommendations, too, and it looks like it's a department issue as much as it is a board issue. I'm kind of concerned of going 4 years just because these are expensive and the boards have to pay for them. Do you think 4 years is the right amount, or do you think it's something you can take care of and a longer extension would work?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I haven't really questioned the recommendation. I know that all of the findings and the growing pains, as Ms. Curtis mentioned, are very present for us since we're working with the board and licensees to address any issues, even ones that may not have risen to the occasion of an audit, to make sure that the board is maturing and we're providing them with those resources. I feel confident that within 4 years, these issues will have well been addressed, but whether that's the right number is probably not for me to offer an opinion.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up?
And maybe, I don't know whether you know this, but how much is this audit costing, you know, this board? I'm sure it's not the same for each one. Each one's probably more complicated. I don't know if that's a Ms. Curtis or an answer you may know.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm sure Ms. Curtis could speak to the cost. It is not a cost that's borne by our agency. And so any of the incidental costs, such as our staff time and preparing documents and assisting the auditors with their process, we go about that as a course of business, but we're not charged anything specific from legislative audit.
So follow-up.
Follow-up.
And neither are the boards. So the boards do not pay this. This is just borne by the legislature.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. If we could get that amount, we don't have to get it right now, but we're talking about a shortened amount, and this seemed like a lot of these issues had to do with the department over the board. I just want to make sure that we're not penalizing the board, even though I know they're still growing.
Ms. Curtis, if you could get us the information, unless you have it now. you can feel free to take your time, get back to us. You can put yourself on the record.
This is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. I did anticipate that question. and I didn't bring the information with me, but I know I had Linda Day at our Anchorage office look it up as far as how many hours it took for us to conduct the audit. And so if you can direct that question to Linda Day at our Anchorage office, hopefully she can provide you the number of hours. And our rate is, I want to say it's $77 an hour. So Linda, if you could, Chair, if that's okay with you to have her respond.
Is she online?
I believe she's online.
For the record, this is Linda Day. I'm the audit manager of the Anchorage office. I'm sorry I don't have the number of hours in front of me, Chris.
You could
we can send it, yeah.
Yes, yeah, if you could get it to our office and we'll distribute that out. Thank you very much. Are there any further, Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, so I do want to address, there was a concern brought up about filling that vacant position or that vacant board member. And reading it, I mean, that makes sense. It would be very difficult to find someone that wasn't a licensed telecare provider, employee of the state, or current or former. And I think that's the one that kind of stands out to me, the former member of another occupational licensing board. If we were to remove the requirement for that you could not be a former member of another occupational licensing board, would that make it easier to be able to fill the role of this vacant public member?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the appointment of board members is managed through the governor's office. And I work very closely with the boards and commissions, Director Marquardt. So I do know that the varying different statutory requirements for boards do make it prohibitive. We also want to encourage more people to apply, which would be helpful. So I would provide a general response that would be in favor of removing restrictions to allow more people to serve on the board. I'm sure that Director Marquardt could speak to whether that specific term would lead to the floodgates opening, but any change would be appreciated, I'm sure, by the governor's office.
Follow up on that.
Follow up?
Yeah, and I want to make sure that I was clear. I'm only referencing for this particular board, mm-hmm. that language there that would create. If you could have contact Director Marquardt and. They've obviously addressed a concern, mm-hmm. and this might be a chance to fix it. Obviously, time would be of the essence to see if we could, but if removing that language would assist Director Marquardt and not create other challenges, I'd love to be able to see what we could do to help. Thank you.
And the chair of the board, Mr. Edward Smith, I didn't know if you wanted to chime in on that.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I guess I'm trying to figure out the costs of licensing, and I'm seeing it on page 15 here. It looks like renewals would be $350 plus $60, and then we were told there was a $20 and thought of $50. Is that another $70? Or was that relating to the $60 fee for the background check?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the $50 may be the business license fee, possibly to have to operate as a sole proprietor. But the schedule of fees is on page 15, and the renewal fee is the $290 with the 60, so the 350.
Okay, so then that other estimation of 20 and 60, that would probably be the $60 split the two things for the background check.
Go ahead.
Ms. Chambers?
For the record, this is Sarah Chambers responding. There are costs that are incurred by the licensee to have their fingerprints rolled, to have them taken. So there are costs to between the licensee and the person who's rolling the fingerprints to get that done. That's not a cost that we regulate, so it's not included. So as Ms. Curtis said, it's $290 every 2 years to renew, and there is a $60 fingerprint fee, which is a pass-through. It's the cost that the Department of Public Safety charges us to process those fingerprints.
And, Mr. Chair, follow up. So the is it normal or is it usual to have an every 2 years getting fingerprints and background check redone in every 2 years, or was the board's recommendation for 3 years more in line with the rest of the fingerprinting requirements for boards?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, out of all of the programs that require fingerprinting, this is the only one that requires subsequent fingerprinting. No other programs require fingerprinting for renewal. And at the time this program started, that was legislatively mandated, and I know the board's given a lot of serious thought to it and has worked with Representative Keto on recommendations. Were that bill to be called forward, then we'd be able to have a robust conversation about the frequency. But I know the board has worked to strike a balance between too frequent and not enough to maintain that public safety aspect that they believe is important. And the chairman of the board may be able to offer more perspective on that.
Okay, and I'm gonna follow up.
Representative Seaton.
Although you don't regulate it, do you know about what that fingerprinting rolling fingerprint, what that fee is when you have to go into some place to have that done?
No, I do not.
Yeah, thank you. Any further questions of the committee, Representative Guttenberg?
So what is the point of the continued fingerprinting? I mean, is it an identity issue? Is it somebody comes back up for renewal, you just process the same set of fingerprints, bring them back for background checks? Or the re-fingerprinting is, what purpose does that do that isn't done by just using the previous fingerprints? Is it identity check?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, we just, in the last few months, went through our first experience with renewing this program and our first experience with fingerprint renewal processes. We are working with our chief investigator and Department of Public Safety to see if there's a way that we can process the fingerprint renewal requirement without people having to be reprinted. That's something that seems to make sense if it's something that is allowed in statute and by the FBI. So that is something we're actively looking into.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay, seeing none, we will also have the same deadline for amendments for HB 275, and that is 5 p.m. on Friday, February 9, 2018. So we will go ahead and set the bill aside and bring it up under bills previously heard. Our next scheduled meeting is tomorrow, which is Wednesday, February 7th at 1:30 p.m., and at that meeting we will hear two bills, HB 236, pending referral. It's the extension of the senior benefits payment program, and then also HB 215, which is public health fees. So with that, we will be adjourned, and the time is currently 3:31 p.m. Thank you, everybody.